72 case. We have the application, we have the referee's report and ruling, and we have the decree. They all follow the standard forms in use at the time. And in none of those documents is the place of use either specified, or nor is there even a place in which to put it. So the place of use was not addressed officially in those documents, nor in the decree. Now, of course, the place of use is important, and the place of use is part of the water right decree. Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. But can we look back in 2010 and find documentation of where it was? Documentation? No. Proof of where it was? Yes. The hearing officer found that. But documentation? No. And the reason that we can't is that the application form and the decree form and the referee's report and ruling form nowhere make provision for putting that information in. So, salient quote from Judge Keenhold on page 11 of his order. Had that information been requested by the forms in place at the time, we would not be here today. That's true. Because had that information been requested by the forms in place at the time, the applicant would no doubt have filled them out, consistent with Ernest Valdez's testimony that the place of use is on the southwest quarter and on the northwest quarter. I think there really can be no dispute that that is how those would have been filled out. That they weren't is a function of the fact that it was not...
had they been filled out, however, they would have given notice to the property owners who, you know, who have water rights that may be injured by this enlargement, who may have gotten into the case. So we have an interesting situation here regarding, you know, an enlargement that occurred that's carrying a 47 appropriation date, and that people in between 47 and today are going to be subordinate to this enlarged use. You would agree that at least it's a de facto enlarged use from the same well, correct?
Again, only in the sense that it's an enlargement from 46 to 66. Yes, that's an enlargement, but it is not an enlargement of the water right that got decreed.
Would you answer me that now? Why do you say that? The decree is just for a pumping rate, but the true water right is the historical beneficial use, correct?
The historical beneficial use in place when the water is appropriated and put to use. It was and I will agree with the water court on this issue. The decree, given all the information that's in place today, and the way that decrees are written today, the decree probably should have said or should have awarded a 1946 appropriation date to irrigation on the southwest quarter and a 1966 appropriation date to irrigation on the northwest quarter. And I agree that's the way it should be construed. That's the water right that is in place at the time. It makes absolutely no functional difference with respect to administration of that water right, because wells are not administered in priority right now. And under the rules in draft form now, but I can see no way in which this would not be the case for any rules promulgated by the state engineer governing groundwater withdrawal, no well, irrespective of its priority date, is going to be able to pump at all unless it replaces depletions to very senior surface water rights. So no well, 1946, 1966, 1926, no well with a 1972 adjudication date is going to pump at all unless it replaces those depletions. Right now it makes no difference in administration whether you've got a one section under 46 and one under 66, and will not in the future. However,
the difficulty with that proposition is that groundwater and surface water are subject to the doctrine of part of the appropriation in priority, and includes wells, right?
It does. It does. Again, I think that one of the reasons that we have no information on the standard decree form, standard referee's report and ruling form, standard application form that were used in the 70s is that there was no administration happening at the time, and that's all I can assume. It was not considered important at the time. It puts the owner of the water right in an untenable and impossible situation, to say to him, boy, you better think about what might be happening in the future when you come in to define your water right, because who knows what glitch in the paperwork might trip you up, when in fact, on the ground, there are no glitches at all. And Justice Hobbs, you pointed to the question of, well, had there been paperwork filed and filled out that indicated different priorities to different sections, or indeed that there were two sections being irrigated, then people would have been on notice. Well, I think the notice requirements, as set forth by this court in the Thornton case, are pretty clear that the application has to put someone on inquiry notice of what the water right being sought is. This application puts someone on inquiry notice of what the water right being sought is. That inquiry causes them to go look at the water right, and the facts show, and nobody disputes, that had anybody looked at the use of this water right, because the application didn't specify where it was going to be used, had anybody looked at the use of this water right, they would have come to the conclusion that it was used on both quarters.
The problem I'm having with this is that your statement is just in the face of 100 years of case law that say that illegal enlargements on the ground don't provide notice to anybody else that, in effect, they've got a decree water right that's capable of being considered in part worthy. As the original version that was then enlarged, you can't explain the Bradley case, you can't explain the other cases we decided recently about illegal on-the-ground enlargements that are in the face of everybody and are not enforced against. And our court has basically said, you take the priority date of the adjudication system as it exists, and you can't grandfather enlargements. You have to go through some kind of process where the applicant has to give affirmative notice and get a decree for enlargement. Now, isn't that our case law?
Yes. I, that's exactly what's going on here. Applicant in 1972 says, here's my water right.
Oh, here's my well. Here's my well, and here's the diversion rate. I don't think there's any proof in us before us that there was any indication that notice was given other than this practice on the ground to other water users that they were seeking to use the same waterway that had irrigated one plot of land and then use it also on a double, in effect, a double acreage. Where is that notice?
There is no notice in the application that the applicant is seeking to use it on the southwest quarter either.
Well, see, that's defined by historic practice when you go to an absolute decree.
There is no change here. The absolute decree is in 72. The historic practice in 72 is irrigation on both
change
plots.
Change includes changing place of use, doesn't it?
Right, but the decree didn't enter until 72. What is being changed? The applicant didn't say, I'm using this on the southwest quarter. The applicant didn't say, I'm using this on both quarters. The applicant said, I'm using this well at 5 cubic feet per second. That's all he said.
Was that correct? Isn't there another issue? The amount of water was way over what the actual production of the well ever was?
There was some testimony raised in the record that the well never did produce 5 CFS.
What do we do with that?
Well, I think that's res judicata. The decree in 72 decreed the flow rate, decreed the place of use. What we're doing here is construing where that was because it's silent about it, but it did decree the place of use. And it decreed the type of use. And it specified specifically the flow rate is 5 CFS. That's res judicata. It did not specify where the place of use was. It did decree it. It had to have. It decreed the water right, and that's part of the element of the water right. But it did not specify it, and so we have to construe it. That's why I'm here before you today. It also decreed the type of use. That is explicit. The type of use is irrigation. So explicit is the flow rate. Explicit is the type of use. Subject to construction is the place of use.
Council, before you could continue on, I'm wondering if you could address your jurisdictional and estoppel argument?
Yes, I certainly can do that. I should do it quickly. Let me start with the jurisdictional argument. There's no doubt that a permit is what the APA considers to be a license. And the APA sets up a process for issuing, amending, revoking licenses. The trouble with treating a well permit as a license under the APA, the way that the state engineer did in this case, is that it opens up the well permitting system and the use of water rights, the water rights administration system, to constant challenge from one water user to another about whether or not that permit, which again does not define the water right, but whether or not that permit was properly issued. And in fact, what happened in this case after we got the ruling from Judge Keenhold was that my client came up to me and said, well, I want to file a challenge to all my neighbor's permits. And I said, you know, you can do that. It's not going to be pleasant. It wasn't fun for you. It won't be fun for you to file the challenge. But the way this decision of Judge Keenhold came down, you can do that. No statute of limitations, no nothing. You just make a complaint to the state engineer and say, hey, I don't think that you issued the conditions on this permit correctly. I don't think that those comport with what the issue really should be. And you have a hearing in front of the state engineer trying to resolve water rights disputes between two water rights owners. My client says, hey, you know, my neighbor, Joe Valdez, expanded his use and got a permit to expand his use. And I'm going to prove to you that his use was different from what it was back 30 years ago. The water court is the place where those kinds of determinations should be made, not the state engineer.
Can I ask you one quick question, because the time is a bit short right here? Is your point there, is your objection that this complaint was initiated by a neighbor, somebody an official, or are you, do you mean to be saying that the engineer doesn't have any authority to modify a permit or revoke it unless you somehow violate it?
That's a very good question. I think that the engineer can modify a permit if new issues come to light, certainly with respect to that permit. So yes, the engineer has authority to modify that permit. What happened in this case wasn't any kind of new issues coming to light.
So you'd be saying whether it was initiated by a neighbor brought to his attention, that doesn't make any difference, that the engineer simply does not have authority to decide that he made a mistake before, and therefore he's going to correct or modify a permit.
I think that brings up the estoppel question. The engineer knew what the issues were with respect to the legal question here about was it a decree, how do I interpret the decree, was it for one quarter or two? Knew what those issues were when he issued the permit. That permit was subject to fairly lengthy negotiations with the state engineer before it got issued, and then just changed his mind. It was a process. I mean, it wasn't the state engineer changing his mind, but when you look at the entity decided to treat that same set of facts differently. No change at all in what had been going on. No change saying, oh, it really wasn't the Northwest Quarter in place at the time. No mistake, but just a decision to treat it differently. So that's the main basis of my estoppel argument as well. What the state engineer did was take the same set of facts and say, you know, really, I regret that I issued that permit. I'm going to change it now.
Well, we're talking about a permit for a replacement water well, right?
That's right.
Which your client applied for.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Through the hearing officer procedure and so on, notice was given, hearing was had, and it was not revoked. It was modified, right?
That's correct.
All right.
It was modified.
Procedure understood.
Yes. I see I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
May it please the court, I'm Paul Bennington, Assistant Attorney General for the State of Colorado, representing the State Engineer, Dick Wolf, and the Division Engineer for Water Division 2, Craig Cotton. As you know, the State Engineer agrees with the legal reasoning and conclusions in Judge Keenhold's order in this case. The state believes this case will set an important precedent for Division III because many well decrees entered in Division III during the early 1970s, perhaps thousands of such decrees, granted appropriation dates without specifying the number or location of acres to be irrigated under those decrees. Judge Keenhold acknowledged this fact during oral argument before the water court. We believe the water judge wrote a careful and thorough decision that correctly applies the law to the undisputed facts in this case. The water court properly found that the 1946 appropriation in this case is limited to the use contemplated at the time of the appropriation in 1946. Every water right has a location of use contemplated at the time of the appropriation, and VBAR concedes that in 1946, only the irrigation of the southwest quarter of Section 3 was intended. They concede this at page 5 of their opening brief. However, VBAR now wrongly argues that an intent arising for the first time in 1966 when it acquired the northwest quarter of Section 3 should establish the limit of its 1946 appropriation, even though this new intent was never disclosed to the water court during the 1970 adjudication in case number W615. By claiming a 1946 appropriation date, the application limited itself to what was contemplated in 1946. The application also referenced a 1955 filing statement and map, which only shows the southwest quarter of Section 3 and the location of the well within that quarter section. The court record in case number W615 lacks any evidence of an intent to irrigate more than what was irrigated in 1946. Nothing in the application or the decree or the ruling of the referee supports any intent other than the intent supporting the 1946 appropriation. The irrigation of the northwest quarter of Section 3 beginning in 1966 was unlawful. It was unlawful because VBAR's predecessor had not complied with the General Assembly's mandate in the 1965 Groundwater Management Act for a well permit if they wanted to increase or extend the supply of water from this well. That mandate's found in 3790-137-1 and required that on and after May 17, 1965, they needed to get a well permit for this existing well if they wanted to increase or extend the supply of water from this well. They did not do so. So all the diversions beginning in 1966 up until today have been unlawful. As a result, in 1972, no lawful appropriation for the irrigation of the northwest quarter had yet occurred. The water court cannot be presumed to have granted an absolute water right for a 1946 appropriation for the irrigation of the northwest quarter based on unlawful diversions of which the water court had no knowledge.
Also, can I just tell you, I mean, how does the water court not have the knowledge in 1972? I mean, I guess you're accepting that in 1966 they are irrigating, and during that whole period they were irrigating the additional land. And I guess I'm just wondering, how do we know that in 1972 there was the knowledge of that additional area?
Because the court record is void of any indication whatsoever that the water court was made aware of those unlawful diversions and that application of the northwest quarter.
I mean, it's just silent. There's nothing either way, there's nothing saying the court was aware or wasn't aware. There's nothing there,
Your Honor. In the early 70s, when folks became aware that their wells needed to have adjudicated water rights and were going to be integrated into the prior appropriation system, hundreds of these forms were produced and submitted to the water court, and even the water referee's rulings were on forms, the water court's decisions were on forms, and a lot of those just moved from one form to the other, and the information was transposed and approved. In this case, there was no testimony. The testimony Mr. Suiso talks about by Mr. Valdez was testimony in front of the hearing officer here. It wasn't testimony in 1972 before the water court. There was no such testimony. testimony at that time. So there wasn't any hearing held on the application in W615. So the water court, you know, wasn't made aware, at least in the court record or any of the documents put before the court, that there was this irrigation, this expanded use going on in 1972 when the application was submitted.
Well, do we attribute any knowledge to the state engineer from the fact that he administers the water in this area, presumably goes out and doesn't?
Well, Your Honor, Ms. Justice Hobbs asked earlier about whether the northwest quarter was being irrigated. The record shows that there was some tailwater from ditch water rights that made it under the northwest quarter. There's nothing in the record that indicates that the division engineer or the water commissioner was aware of this expanded use at the time of the application in 1972, or that the neighbors were aware of it, for that matter. And it was when the center sprinkler pivots got installed and started spraying water all over the northwest quarter that the neighbors said, wait a minute, what's going on here? And I don't believe up until that time they had any knowledge that they were actually using the well to irrigate the northwest quarter, but the sprinklers, center sprinkler systems made that quite obvious, and that's when Mr. Gallegos filed his complaint with the state engineer.
Well, what about Mr. Sears' argument that they filled out all the forms that they were required to fill out, and that it's not their fault that the forms were
placed in
use?
The forms did ask Justice Malarkey for an appropriation date. And as Justice, and this was a claim for an absolute water right. So they were claiming a water right with an appropriation date of 1946 that was made absolute on that date. They could have added in the forms or in a separate claim another claim for a 1966 appropriation date that would have received a 1972 priority and could identify when that use occurred. However, that use was unlawful, Your Honor, so the water court couldn't have given them an absolute decree. At most, what they could have asked for was a conditional water right, conditioned upon them getting a well permit for the expanded use as required by the 1965 Act, and then diverting under that well permit to irrigate the northwest quarter.
And I think you start off your argument by saying you could do that today.
They would have to do an augmentation plan, and part of the reason the VBAR is so desperate to get this approved under this decree is that today it's doubtful they can get a water right in Division 3 because there's no water left for appropriation. So what they would have to treat their well as is an augmented structure without a decreed water right. They could do that, but they'd have to either have to get a change of the 1946 water right to irrigate both quarter sections, or they have to get an augmentation plan to replace their out-of-priority depletions. So it's possible for them to still irrigate the northwest quarter, but they have to do it pursuant to the procedures prescribed by law. Now, an appropriation is defined by statute as, quote, the application of a specified portion of the waters of the state to a beneficial use pursuant to the procedures prescribed by law, end quote. That's in 3792.103.3a. So VBAR never complied with those procedures required by law when it began expanding its use in 1966 because it had not complied with the 1965 Act's requirement for a well permit for that expanded use. As the water court stated in its order, quote, had plaintiff's predecessor applied for a permit to expand the use of the well in 1966, plaintiffs could have and most likely would have sought confirmation of their 1966 expansion of use to irrigate the northwest quarter of Section 3 in the 1972 application for the adjudication on the well, unquote. The judge found that it was this failure by VBAR's predecessor that really led to this case. They didn't comply with the 65 Act when they began irrigating the northwest quarter in 1966. If they had, they would have been. Everybody would have been on notice of that expanded use.
Well, there have been other persons that have been installed to the 1969 Act, as you remember, allowed a two-year grace period for coming in for an application, and you got your true date of appropriation. And it's my recollection, though, that in the succeeding years, you're then stuck with the year in which you filed your application, right? So
that's correct.
There were people that got on to what the 69 Act was doing, what this grandfathering of the right to come in and get your true date, but there were many who didn't. I mean, that's
unfortunately, that's true, Your Honor. And it was unfortunate, and the water judge acknowledged this too, that the forms didn't require folks to identify their irrigated acreage. And that was something that was later corrected in forms. But we do have other cases lined up behind this one, Your Honor.
Well, I want to point you to 379137, and it deals in subsection 2A2. Effective July 1, 2006, upon receiving an application for replacement well or a new increased or additional supply of groundwater, it then goes on and talks about the state engineer's duty with respect to issuing the replacement well permit, finding whether there'd be injury and that kind of thing. I assume that's within the body of law that's applicable to this replacement well proceeding, right?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. That should have been, this proceeding was indicated after July 1st, 2006.
Right, so when was the application for the replacement well? When did that
I believe that, the application for the replacement well, I think may have been initially initiated in 2005.
2005?
Yes.
It was 2004, actually, that it was initiated. That one was denied. There was another one in 2005.
And
that resulted in the permit.
And when was the permit issued?
The actual date of the permit, I would have to defer to Mr. Suiso on, Your Honor.
Just trying to get the dates and, you know, whether or not this provision of the General Assembly specifically applied or not. I was trying to get that sequence. Maybe we can pick it up from the documents that are included in all this record.
Your Honor, in all the briefing before the water court below, it was 379137(1) that the court felt was a controlling provision in this case. So to reiterate, in 1972, as to the northwest quarter, at most what VBAR could have been properly granted was a conditional water rate conditioned upon obtaining a well permit and lawfully diverting to irrigate the northwest quarter. VBAR argues today that the law only requires three things, an intent, a diversion, and a beneficial use, and that all three of these requirements were satisfied in 1972 at the time of their application for the northwest quarter. However, this is incorrect because the diversion and beneficial use must occur pursuant to procedures prescribed by law. It must be lawful, including satisfying the General Assembly's mandate in the 1965 Act. VBAR today has no adjudicated priority for the irrigation of the Northwest Quarter and may only irrigate this land under a change of water rate or an augmentation plan approved by the Water Court. Because the water source is over-appropriated, and VBAR's irrigation of the northwest quarter will cause lagged out-of-priority depletions, a well permit cannot be issued for the irrigation of the northwest quarter without an augmentation plan to replace such depletions or a change of the 1946 water right. The Water Court's interpretation of the decree in W615 based on the undisputed facts should be affirmed by this court. Now, as to the equitable estoppel issue, an initial mistake by the state engineer's office in issuing the original replacement well permit cannot vest VBAR with a water right never approved by the Water Court. This court has repeatedly held that the administrative decisions of the water administration officials do not create water rights. The state engineer should not be stopped from distributing and regulating water according to Water Court decrees as mandated by the General Assembly. Mr. Gallego's right to petition the state engineer to modify the well permit cannot be blocked through equitable estoppel asserted against the state engineer. VBAR was informed in advance by the division engineer that the extent of use allowed under the decree in W615 was in doubt. And VBAR assumed the risk of moving forward with that understanding. No manifest injustice exists because injury to the water rights of third parties is prevented by the state engineer's decision as affirmed by the water judge. VBAR can still put its sprinklers to use on the northwest quarter upon obtaining an augmentation plan or a change of water right, as well as a valid well permit recognizing the expanded location of use.
Council, can I just get you to address opposing council's argument? Basically, what is to stop the engineer from just, today I am going to issue a permit, tomorrow I change my mind? I mean, is there some control on that other than equitable stop?
Yes, it's a judicial review standard under the APA, Justice Ide, that the water court will review any such decisions, see if they're arbitrary or capricious. And that would be, you know, without some basis in fact, that would be an arbitrary or capricious decision that could be reversed by the water court. The Judge Keenhold relied on the statutory authority of the state engineer to conduct its own investigations, and it does have a duty to do so. If for any reason, you know, it's brought to its attention that there's a problem with the well permit, they have a duty to investigate, and if they find that that well permit was issued in error or that the permittee is in violation of that permit, they can act to modify or revoke that permit. So I think the APA judicial review standard protects against that.
Can you just, I see where Judge Keyhole said that just however, I can't find the statutory site. The idea is, as mentioned by Mr. Keith, you know, irrigation of wells. Could you show me where it says you can cite, because I'm from the state engineer and can resolve well permitting issues?
Yes, I don't think that's the correct site in the order, Your Honor, looking at the statute in the book today. But we did cite it. It is in the record, Your Honor, in our brief that was filed with it would be section 3780, Your Honor, 3780-102F. 3780-102F. That was what we had cited for the water court, Your Honor, and I think the water court may have miscited.
Follow up on your answer, Justice Ide, just in a slightly more formal way. I'm sort of curious about how the APA gets involved in this.
The APA is involved because this is a final agency action by the state engineer. The permitting decisions that the General Assembly delegated to the state engineer under 3797, 1 and 2 are agency actions. Those permitting decisions are agency actions that receive APA review, but then are reviewed by the water court.
Why is that?
That is because there is nothing in the statutory scheme for the well permitting decisions under 3791, 371, and 2 that conflicts with the APA or that takes that judicial review out of the APA. There are some other instances where the General Assembly has taken the judicial review of certain water matters out of the APA. But when there's no statutory conflict between the statute under which the agency is making its decision and the APA's provisions, then the judicial review occurs under the APA. When
and just to that point, so if we're up to the point where this is a judicial review under the APA,
yes.
Why does it go to the water?
It goes to the water court because it is a water matter that affects and the water court has been given exclusive jurisdiction over water matters. So even though it's an APA review, it's also a water matter because it will determine the VBAR's right to use water. So that's what brings it under the...
It seems, doesn't it, that the statute that places this in water court, as a water matter. Also describes very expressly powers of the engineer with regard to cease and desist orders and whatever, lengthy amount of remedies. Do we have any authority? We all seem to be sort of presuming here that, well, this is also sort of an administrative matter. It's like a license. So what, we'll integrate these two statutes and we somehow decide that we're going to treat this as an administrative review, a judicial review of an administrative decision, but we're going to move it over into the water statutes and have the water court do it?
That's correct, because of the special expertise of the water judge, but also to the extent the APA and the water statutes can be reconciled, that is how they get reconciled. In fact, Mr. Gallegos raised this issue before the water judge, and this is in the record before the court, arguing that the APA review should occur in the Denver court. Because that's where, you know, the state engineer is located, and that's where the EPA reviews should be held. And Judge Keenhold looked at the law, looked at the statutes, and both the APA and the water statutes, and determined, no, this is a water matter. We can reconcile the two statutes and do the APA review.
Something in the water statutes, when dealing with the authority of the water judge or the engineer, either expressly or implicitly indicate that? How did he reconcile that? How do you arrive at that integration?
By the lack of any conflict or any direction from the General Assembly that this should be anything other than APA review.
I think your former answers indicate that the Groundwater Management Act statute is very important here, as well as the 69 Adjudication Act statute, as well as the APA. And isn't it the Groundwater Management Authority, the state engineer, that issued permits that has this now melded? Is three statutes, correct? Not two, not just the water right adjudication enforcement power of the state engineer in 92, but it's the Groundwater Management Act passed in 1965.
In this instance, Your Honor, I believe we're just under the Groundwater Management Act, because the permitting decisions are made under the Groundwater Management Act in 3791, 371, and 2. If they had gone in for an application to the water court, Your Honor, that's what would trigger the 1969 Act, but that wasn't triggered here. We're just dealing with the permitting decision and the judicial review of that permitting decision, which is just under the Groundwater Management Act.
So even though the water court, then, by this reasoning, is the appropriate authority to perform a judicial review, is the water court limited in the nature of its review? You seem to suggest it was, based on limitations of review of an administrative decision, a licensing decision.
Yes, because that's the water court is limited by the judicial review standard of the APA, you know, which is arbitrary and capricious, abuse of discretion, not in accordance with law. And in this case, we had undisputed facts, so the court was just reviewing the question of law. And again, he's just ruling on whether, given the facts, the undisputed facts in the record before the state engineer, did he make the right decision in his permitting decision?
And can I just follow one last question on that? And so, assuming we didn't have this kind of unusual situation here that has raised the question of equitable estoppel and all that, you know, a modification of a permit. And let's assume we just have an application for a permit and somebody wanted to challenge it. How would that challenge the engineer's decision to deny one, or that the engineer didn't grant exactly what the applicant wanted? What would be the procedure for that?
The procedure would be very similar. The applicant could appeal that decision to the hearing officer and have the kind of adjudicatory hearing that we had in this proceeding that can get appealed to the state engineer and then appealed up to the water court for review of that permitting decision.
So at least in practice, that's treated as an Administrative Procedure Act matter?
Yes, that's correct. Now, as to whether the state engineer had jurisdiction to modify the well permit, the water judge correctly and fully addressed this issue in his order. Upon receiving Mr. Gallegos' complaint, the hearing officer provided notice of the complaint to VBAR. However, VBAR could not correct the well permit on its own. Only the state engineer could do so. prior to the adjudicatory hearing, V-Bar had the opportunity to agree to the correction of the well permit in its pre-hearing statement ordered by the hearing officer. V-Bar declined this opportunity in its pre-hearing statement and then fully participated in both the adjudicatory hearing before the hearing officer and the subsequent appeal to the state engineer. V-Bar also admits in its opening brief any alleged procedural error was harmless and would not have changed V-Bar's position or conduct in this proceeding. The state fully complied with the requirements of the APA and the rules of the Division of Water Resources regarding such proceedings. V-Bar was fully and fairly heard at every stage of these proceedings. The Water Court correctly applied the law to the undisputed facts in the record and should be affirmed. I would be happy to answer any further questions you may have. Thank you for your time.
On behalf of the court, I want to thank both counsel for your arguments. The case will stand submitted.